Radio Split Ranch.
Hello and welcome once again to Radio Split Ranch, a monthly visit with the Capital Region's great broadcasters of the past, sometimes present. I'm Warren Garling when I'm not on the radio, and sometimes when I am. You'll understand that later. This month, as we step into the Wayback Time Warp Machine, you're going to have to strap yourself in a little tight. We're going back more than 50 years with an old friend of mine who didn't spend a very long time in broadcasting, but who says he wouldn't have had his long time career in entertainment and education if it weren't for the foundation of his radio days. So if you don't recognize his name, you'll certainly identify with his love of the industry. Sit back and meet a man who just likes to make people of all ages laugh. I hope you'll enjoy my conversation with Bob Carroll. Well, it's been much too long since I've spoken to our guest today, although we do keep in touch other ways, thanks to the magic of the internet. But Bob Carroll and I worked together so many years ago that we're going to try to skip the dates as to when it was. But Bob, thank you for joining me from beautiful downtown. Where are you? Burbank, Hollywood?
Burbank.
Burbank. There you go. Beautiful downtown Burbank. And how's life out there?
Life is treating us good here. It's nice to be retired. I haven't figured out what career I'm retired from, but I am retired.
Well, that'll come up in our conversation because you've done so much over the years. And it all started, weren't you just a young boy from the Amsterdam or Johnstown area? Tell me a little bit about how you got started.
From Gloversville, Johnstown area.
Okay.
And when I was a kid, I used to watch Ed Sullivan and watch all the acts on there.
Sure.
And I wanted to be a magician. I wanted to be a ventriloquist. I wanted to be on the radio. I wanted to be on television. I wanted to do it all.
How old do you think that you were when this struck you? I mean, or do you just always remember feeling this way?
I remember when. When Sherry Lewis used to be on television in
sure.
the '50s,
yeah,
she was kind of growing up in Paul Winchell and Jerry Mahoney.
There you go.
Shows, and he was like the forerunner of the Muppets because Jerry could dance and sing and play the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's a ventriloquist figure, he did all those things. And I went, that's what I wanted to do with a puppet to make him seem alive.
Yeah,
and. But it was years before I was able to get a real ventriloquist figure because they were expensive back then.
Sure, sure.
As they are now, they're even more. But in the interim, I went and my mother got me magic tricks for Christmas and went to New York City and got magic tricks. But my first being on a stage was when I was 10 years old. I would do impressions. I would do Ed Sullivan. I did President Kennedy. I did Jimmy Durante, and so I ended a talent show at the Glove Theater in Gloversville.
There you go.
And it was hosted by a disc jockey from WENT, Ron Jacobitz.
Okay.
And so Ron Jacobitz was there, and another guy was named Tom McHugh, and he was from the radio station. And so they had me on the talent show. I came in second, so I forgot who came in first, but I wound up doing impressions. And they asked me if I wanted to come up to the radio station and do those impressions on the radio.
Really? You're 10 years old?
Yes.
Wow.
I was like 10, 11 years old about that time.
Yeah.
And since it was downtown Gloversville at the time, they had the station on Main Street before they moved out to the woods there. So they asked me to come up, and I was struck by the whole radio station thing because at that time, in the early 60s or whatever, it was archaic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, they had these big, giant records, like even bigger than the 33s that they put on.
That's right. Yeah, transcriptions with not just music on them, but mostly commercials and PSAs radio. And stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
They were still doing radio shows like Arthur Godfrey back then.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you're talking really the early 60s, yeah.
Yes, they were doing Arthur Godfrey. They had transcripts of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy and all these old radio shows that I thought they were being broadcast, you know, from nation to nation or coast to coast.
Yeah.
But they weren't. They were just on records.
Okay.
So they asked me to come up, and I did it. And I says, thank you very much and everything. And I kind of forgot about it. I just didn't want to go there until I found in Woolworths, a record called You Be a DJ.
Oh, geez.
Do you remember that?
I do, yes.
It was put out by Dick Clark Enterprises.
Yep.
And a guy by the name of Don was the guy. And one side of the record was him doing the whole thing. And the other side, they gave you a script. And you had to do it with music intros. And you had to do the whole thing.
Right.
And everything was on there. So I didn't want to do jokes that he did, you know, all those jokes that he did on the record.
Okay.
You know, Don's Drive-In. So I took all the music and I just took real commercials out of the newspaper and did it to that.
Okay.
And I didn't know what, I put it on a tape recorder. And then I said, you know, I'm going to go down to the radio station, WNT, and give them my tape.
Why not?
You know, but I was like 12 and my voice was real squeaky.
Squeakier than it is now, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit squeakier than it is, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that, we all put on a radio voice.
That's true.
We always have a radio. We have, you know, and the WPGR radio, and here we are, 1540.
Mm-hmm.
We always had those kind of radio voice guys.
Yep.
You know, like Don Bowers.
Okay, we're going to start picking on people now. All right.
No, I worked with him at WNT.
And I worked with him at WSNY, yeah.
Yeah, we're good friends. But anyway, they played it, and they had the program director listen to it, and they go, well, it's not really something we're interested in right now. We got it. I said, okay, fine. They said, but you can hang around here once in a while if you want to and learn the business.
Cool.
So I said, really? This is, yeah, you can put records away and you can clean up and stuff, but you know, we're not going to pay you nothing.
Of course not.
I was so excited about it. And they go, but when you get, so when I got in high school, just the first year of high school, I asked them, I said, could we do like news from the high school, like radio news for the high school? You know, I'll do like a 5-minute report.
Nice.
So they said, okay, we'll do that. So they got somebody from Gloversville, Johnstown, and I wound up doing the Johnstown News. And eventually they wound up hiring me, but I couldn't be on the radio because my voice was too high.
Okay.
So I actually started probably when I was 13 working for WENT.
Wow. Well, you beat me by 3 years. That's cool. Yeah.
13 years old. So I worked for them, but I couldn't. They wouldn't let me. They actually made promos for me called the Bob Carroll Silent Hour. So they wouldn't let me do the commercials or the weather or anything because my voice was high.
So you're a glorified board op.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened was Howard Samuels was running for governor of New York way back then. And I was the only one who was able to interview him when he came to high school.
Wow.
So I got the interview, and they asked me if I would do it and bring it down to the radio station. I said, yeah, I would. And they cut my voice out.
Jeez.
And the other disc jockeys were upset.
Yeah.
They said, he got the whole interview. Why don't you say, here's our Johnstown High School reporter interviewing Howard Samuels. So they said, okay, we'll do that. Fine. So I didn't get really on the radio until Christmas Day. One of the disc jockeys, Tom McHugh, wanted to be with his family.
Of all things.
And, yeah. You know, the radio didn't pay much back. So I'd rather be with my family and Joe Tobin, who ran the station. Well, what are we going to do? We don't have anybody else to come in. And Tom says, yeah, get Bob in.
A star is born.
And he says, I know he works here, but I never heard him on the radio. And they said, because you won't let him. So they called my house Christmas Eve, and they asked me if I would come in Christmas Day and work. You know, when you work Christmas Day, you just work by yourself.
Oh, no, there's nobody else in the building. Yeah, yeah.
Right. You're just taking news off the ticker tape parade there and reading the thing. But I did it by myself, and then I just wound up having my own show after a while.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And after I left there, I mean, I went to a lot of radio stations, WCSS in Amsterdam. I went there and went there for a few weeks. They needed to fill in.
Okay.
But then I went to WLFH in Little Falls.
Mm-hmm.
WLFH was run by Hank Brown, who I don't know if you know Hank Brown, but or heard of.
It seems that a lot of the folks that worked or that ran stations the outskirts of the Capital District, I really don't remember a lot of their names, including my own when I was working in Saratoga.
He had his own TV show called Twisterama at the time.
There you go.
Yeah, it was on KTV, WKTV. That's
right,
what it was.
Right.
Channel 2. So I worked with him at WLFH, and it was one of those stations where they paid you in coupons. Food coupons, tire coupons. Very little money.
It beats vinyl. I've been paid that way.
Get record. Take whatever record.
Exactly.
But it was the best experience at WLFH because my boss, Hank Brown, was part of the radio crew, and he loved it when we were just jokes on the radio.
Nice.
So we wound up doing so many different things that it was pre-Howard Stern.
Okay.
We did things that we'd say we couldn't get away with this on any other station.
Really?
We had a fake frog festival in the town of Little Falls in Ilion that we had Ed Sullivan as the master of ceremonies.
Okay.
We had the whole fake parade. And we had planned this thing weeks ahead of time, and it just didn't happen. It was all inside the radio station.
That's terrific.
But back then was UNIVAC. Remember UNIVAC?
Oh, sure. Computer. Yeah, early computer. Yeah.
Company. They took the whole day off for this frog festival.
Oh,
it didn't exist.
Darned. Now, that's radio. That's the theater of the mind, you know. That's
now,
terrific.
I was the morning disc jockey back then, mm-hmm. and you know, there wasn't a 24-hour station. And I come in the morning, I open at 6,
mm-hmm.
and I come down, and the radio station's gone. It burned down.
Oh, my God.
It burned. The man at night, the night disc jockey, was an arsonist.
Oh, no. You're making this up.
No, I'm not. His name was Joe. I'm not going to say his name.
Sure.
But he burned the radio station down.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, and so we were off the, you know, of course, I didn't know. I mean, where are you going to get the news from? The radio
right.
station is not.
It showed up, and so, it's just not there.
I see the fire trucks are there, and I see Hank Brown there, the other dish out, so we're all out of work.
Man.
But his resource was this, and getting a trailer and getting a new transmitter and getting everything back was like 72 hours.
Excellent.
So it was crazy. And, you know, he says, now, Bob, I know you just had a fire and everybody knows about it in town. I says, yeah, it's a small community. He says, I just asked for one thing. I said, what is that, Hank? What do you want? Don't mention the fire.
I says, seriously.
It's the biggest news story they've ever had in
yeah,
town. Yeah,
exactly.
You don't want me to mention the fire. No, whatever you do, don't say anything about the fire. I says, all right, Hank, you sure? Yep, don't say anything. I said, okay, fine. So we get back on the air, and he says, and now it's time for Bob Carroll's radio show. You know, welcome back. And my first songs were Fire and Rain. I Am the God of Hellfire.
Yeah, right. Crazy World of Arthur Brown. Yeah, love it.
I said, okay, Hank, I didn't mention the fire.
Yeah, that's terrific. Oh, Bob, you're something.
I tried to do something. But then we were, I don't can't remember if I worked at BZA first or KHA first, but that's the last radio stations I really went to.
Okay, so you did go to BZA in Glens Falls, right?
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't remember either. I thought KAJ was the end of your radio career, but I'm not positive on that because that's where we worked together.
I was at KAJ and then I went to BZA. But
okay.
Herb Sabin was at BZA too.
Yeah, and we worked with him at KAJ.
Right. So I think he went to BZA.
And all right. There you go. Okay. So really.
He asked me if I wanted to work there.
So only 5 radio stations in your career.
Well, yeah, I think that's about it. Yes.
Well, it's been nice talking to you, Bob.
But the thing of it is, it was such a great career And the thing of it is, it helped me so much along the way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll spend some more time talking radio before we get into, you know, where the crux of your life, you know, actually went, if you will. But when we were, and we were both in our early 20s when we were at WKAJ, yep. And you found out faster than I did that you really can't live on a radio disc jockey's salary, you know, any place but maybe New York and Los Angeles. And so you were working some other jobs, which I found, you know, very, you know, quite fascinating because, again, you were multi-talented. You weren't just a good disc jockey, and you even did some news, I think, on KAJ for a while. But let's talk about the days we worked together. Let's talk about Kent Jones for about 30 seconds. I'm sorry. We shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but
great.
He was a good boss. He really was. He was a taskmaster. And I remember when I went to work there and told him what I thought my air name should be, he said, "No, we're not stars here. We're radio professionals. You will use your real name." And
exactly.
And that's a question I wanted to ask you. Is Bob Carroll your real name?
Yeah.
So you were born to be somebody with a simple radio TV type name.
Yeah, yes, you know, because people, even though it's long been gone, people always, even when I was a kid, they go, "You wrote for I Love Lucy show."
Oh, God, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was a big name on TV in the early days, Bob Carroll, yeah?
And I am Bob Carroll Jr., too, so that's exactly why people thought that. I go, no, did your father write for that? No. But I didn't write for I Love Lucy. I'm not that old. I am now.
Now you could write for Lucy easily. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But yes, and all of those radio stations that I worked at, all of them were a lot of fun. I never really got mad at anybody or...
Well, we worked with some great people, Yeah.
Growing up in the 70s was very, I don't know, it was just so much fun.
Yes. Oh, I agree. I think the timing was very good, except, and I've said this before on this podcast, I kind of wish sometimes I was born about 40 years earlier because I would love to have been a radio actor with a script and all that stuff. I really enjoy, I got to do it once, and I really would have enjoyed that, I think. And I always thought that during my career. But being a DJ in the 60s and 70s and in radio, I mean, that was, we were stars, you know? I mean, people listened and called in and, you know, all that stuff, you know?
Oh, geez, I remember when we did a live remote from a tuxedo store. In downtown Saratoga, and it was pouring rain, and the guy paid for the whole day, and we did so many crazy things back then.
Yeah. Were you with me?
For Dunkin' Donuts and everything.
Yeah, were you with me when we actually broadcast a parade on the radio? One of the Saratoga parades? There you go. And I looked at the boss, or maybe the sales guy at the time, and said, "Really? A parade on the radio? I mean, isn't it a visual thing, you know?" And he said, we got a sponsor. We're going to do it. We're going to get paid to do it. So we did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think my last job was probably WBZA in Glens Falls because I wanted to be close to the entertainment area.
Sure. And so let's get into that a little bit because some of the folks that I am in contact with here locally today, like Brian Jackson and a few others, they worked with you in other places. So talk about what you were doing while you were working at BZA and KAJ. You were up at Gaslight Village, right?
I hadn't gotten there yet.
Oh, okay. I'm jumping ahead. Okay.
I was pretty close to it at that time.
Okay.
I was working resorts. I was doing my magic act and ventriloquist act and stuff like that.
Okay.
But when I went to Storytown to audition, I went, you know, when you're a kid, you don't think of being afraid. Just go and do it.
Yes, true.
You don't have any conception of what business is. You just say, "I just want to go get this job."
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Storytown, and Mr. Wood, who owned it, Charlie Wood, owned it, was a very nice man. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know what he looked like. But I went up to a Storytown with my puppet and my brochures and resumes and stuff, and I said I wanted to work for him. And he said, "Well, we got no openings. I'm sorry, you know, with nothing I could do for you." I said, "Okay, fine." So as I'm coming downstairs, I see Rex Billings, who was the manager, and he's yelling at me, go, what are you doing up there? What are you, you know? I said, well, I said, talking to the guy in his office. And I said, we're trying to get a job here. He said, well, that's Mr. Wood. He owns the place. You don't have to go talk to him. Talk to me. Uh-huh. As well, I want to work at Gaslight and do my ventriloquist act. Because when Gaslight Village opened in 1950s, 56, I think it was, mm-hmm. 59.
Okay.
Because it only lasted 30 years.
Only.
When it opened in 59, I was one of the first customers at a young age.
Okay.
And I got on stage, on the outdoor stage, with a magician. And he floated me. And I said, man, this is great. I'm on stage and getting applause for doing nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So I wanted to be on that outdoor stage. And eventually I wound up working for him at both parks, Storytown and Gaslight Village.
Terrific.
Great stuff. I worked there, and then I worked there for over 20 summers.
That's crazy, Bob. That's nuts.
Yeah, because, you know, in between, I was working 7 days a week and seven nights in Lake George and Saratoga for the whole summer season. And then I would take the winter off and just do small shows.
Sure.
Because
sure.
There was nothing going on in the winter in the capital district.
That's true. And that has changed a little bit. Lake George is now quite a place to be in the wintertime here.
Yes,
and yeah, and Saratoga, even though it's very busy summertime, it keeps a year-round business going. Lots of great restaurants and venues up there, music venues and such. So, but exactly. But back in the 70s, you're right. The place just kind of folded up in the wintertime.
Yeah, right? but during the summer, during those 13 weeks in the summer, it was the place to be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It was a place, and it started dying out once the airfare started going down and people went to other places.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
They went to, you know, Las Vegas, and they went here and there. And it wasn't like a family destination like it was in the 60s and 70s.
Because
they had so many. I mean, every resort had some kind of entertainment.
Yes, true.
It was Roaring Brook or Thousand Acres or Alpine Lodge or even the motels were having entertainment.
Yep, you're correct. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I was right there at the right time, me and the couple, a handful of other entertainers, was able to get into all those places. I not only worked Storytown, but Timetown, which was way up on the hill, was another small amusement park. I worked there with my friends Rob and Carol Allen. They were magicians. So I worked there, and there was a lot of places around it. You had Frontier Town, North Pole.
That's true.
Magic Forest. So many different places where people could work. And so I worked there, and I worked exotic dance clubs because they had those in the area. Yes, I worked with strippers.
Oh, my Lord. I think that's the first time the word strippers has been said on our podcast.
Well, there you go. They were lovely human beings.
It was absolutely, yes.
The thing of it is, because even back then, when I started doing that, I was 16, 17 years old.
Mm.
Working at the Rustic Inn and all these other places around that had that kind of entertainment.
Yeah.
But I had to sit in the kitchen.
Sure.
I couldn't come out to the bar area because I wasn't 18.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Whatever. Crazy.
And so I had to sit in the kitchen before, so, and they'd bring me food or something, and I'd go on and do my show and collect my $75 and get out of there.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
But you do enough of those $75 evenings and it added up. You could actually eat, you know, it's terrific.
Exactly. Because being the only one out there that was doing those things.
Yeah.
It was great. But even after the 80s, because we left to go to Las Vegas to work in 1979, 80, and 81.
Okay. All right.
I still came back to work Gaslight Village.
Oh, that's cool. That's pretty neat, yeah.
Gaslight Village, yesterday's fun today.
The big news in Lake George is Gaslight Village, featuring the all-new ice show extravaganza Americana Ice. Over 40 spectacular rides and shows included in one admission price. Enjoy the space shuttle, cavalcade of cars, and old-time melodramas. Continuous live entertainment, all wrapped up in the 1890s atmosphere of fantasy and fun. Gaslight Village, Lake George, New York.
It's so weird because we had a television show back in Albany in the 70s.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit on Channel 13, right?
Channel 13, WAST.
When it was WAST, Albany, Schenectady, Troy, correct? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it was near East Greenbush, I believe.
Menands, yep.
Yes, because they had the Menands Mall, remember?
Oh, gosh, yeah, sure.
There was a flea market in there eventually.
Yep.
Yes, but they had the, they called, I was working the magic shop. There was several of them. At the Northwood Mall, we had a House of Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a magic shop up the street called MCM Magic. And so I had many different hats that I wore. And so they asked me, so would you think about doing a television show? We're going to call it Up and Away.
There you go. What year do you think this was, Bob?
Jeez, 72, 73, something like that.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So it was after your radio stints were done, your radio career was pretty much done. Yeah. Okay.
So we did that. We did that for about a year, and it was a successful little kid show.
Sure.
And we knew Betty George and Moo.
There you go. Absolutely. John Wolfe, yeah, famous folks from Channel 13, yeah. Absolutely.
So when we left, because one of the guys who was the MC of our show, he wanted to go to New York. So I said, well, I can't do it just with one other person. I needed three, and there wasn't anybody around. So
we just
gave up the show and said, we weren't getting paid much. You know how TV was back
then. Oh, yeah.
You know, it was sponsored by Sears, but there was three of us. We got $50 a piece
to
come in and do a show for kids.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it was $150. That was their budget.
Yeah, but once again, as with radio and those early days of TV, you weren't doing it so much for the money as that you just enjoyed doing it, and you couldn't think of doing anything that was more fun.
So that's the thing. When I worked at Gaslight Village, I don't know if you've been there. You know that there was a big giant opera house.
Yep.
That was the last vestige of vaudeville.
That's true.
If I had to go back in time, I would say I would have been a vaudevillian.
There you go. Yeah.
And I had met so many people at Gaslight Village that helped me with my career because those people were on their way down as I was just coming up.
There you go.
Because they had been on the Sullivan. They had been on variety shows. They'd been in the circus. They traveled all over the world. I mean, I worked with the Royal Lilliputians, who were part of the troupe that were the Munchkins and the Wizard of Oz.
Yes, I remember that, and that's wild.
They were also in Danny Kaye's The Court Jester. They had some parts in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with Joe Jackson Jr., and Joe Jackson Jr. was a clown, a tramp clown, who rode a bike on the ice, and it fell apart, and he put it back together. But between him and his father had the act in the early 1900s. Between the two of them, they had that act, the same act, for over 100 years.
There you go. Isn't that crazy?
It is. I mean, you couldn't do that today.
Well, obviously. Yeah, times change. Yeah, yeah.
But he worked, you know, we had the ice show. There was so much talent there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Gaslight Village, where we have continuous entertainment over at the Opera House. Right now, Oleo acts are now going on with our singing waiters and waitresses. The outdoor stage is located directly across from the main entrance, and our first show of the day will be at 2:20 this afternoon. That's just 15 minutes from now. Gaslight Village will present The Odd Couple, Bob Carroll and Ted Ellis, comedy and ventriloquism. Plenty of park bench seats are available. Head over that way now and enjoy the show.
Me and Floyd Vivino. Floyd became Uncle Floyd down in Jersey, and he was in movies like Good Morning Vietnam and Crazy People with Dudley Moore. And
mm-hmm.
So he became an actor, and he became famous in New Jersey and had a career down there on television. So all of us really were just starting out.
Sure. Yeah.
And I say that because of the fact that people say, why did you go back for 20 years? It was because we all wanted to go back every year. We didn't want that summer to end.
Yeah. Crazy.
Because Lake George was, you know where Lake George is, but Gaslight Village was the village you saw before you got into Lake George.
That's true. Yep.
Because you come over that Route 9 and you see that lights of the Ferris wheel and the park, you think that's Lake George.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. And you hadn't even gotten to the village yet, no?
Exactly.
Crazy.
So all of those things happened, and then I eventually went to Vegas, and I worked in an amusement park, Old Vegas, out there for a while. And then we came back home because I was working in all the lounges.
Okay.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when Howard Hughes bought up all the hotels and he came in and bought things, he got rid of all the lounge acts. So there was no place to be bad anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they had, talk about lounge acts. I mean, you had Don Rickles in the lounge.
Yep.
You know, Waylon Flowers and Madam. You had all these people working lounge acts.
Yeah.
And it was only a 2-drink minimum.
There you go.
You know, you come in, sit down, and it was 24 hours of entertainment.
Yeah.
So I just came back, and then luckily I did, because I worked for a private company and did school shows, safety shows for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Until I finally retired. But
okay.
I did that for 25 years.
All right. Well, let's back up a little bit, because a couple of highlights happen along the way here where we actually cross paths again a couple of times. And one of them is you got into the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for the unknowing and uninitiated, that's not easy to do. And
no.
And you didn't, you know, ride a bike upside down for, you know, 24 hours or something like that. You actually, well, you tell the folks what you what wound up happening.
I did it twice.
Okay.
I looked in the Guinness Book and it said 12 hours Guinness Book record.
Okay.
Joke telling.
For joke telling. Yes, there you go.
Joke telling. Now, on Wolf Road in Albany, there was a Beefsteak Charlie's.
Okay.
Remember those days?
I do.
Yeah. So there was a lounge, and I was working there, and the guy says, can you do something exciting, you know, so we get some business in the lounge? So I could do this thing if I could try it. So I did 13 hours.
Okay.
And so they had to open early in the morning, and, you know, they couldn't serve drinks or anything at that hour. But So I did it for 13 hours, figuring I was going to get into the Guinness books.
Yeah.
But little did I know that it's all about the timing when you do things, because the Guinness books get published at a certain time and they only take so many, you know, entries.
Sure.
And the latest entry gets in.
Okay.
So I had to call Guinness Book after I didn't get in the first time, because somebody did 15 hours.
Okay.
After I did 13. So I go, okay, it's me and this guy in England. So I called Guinness and I said, when is the latest I can put something in the book so it gets into the following year? They told me. So I wound up doing it again for 24 hours and 5 minutes.
Yeah.
In Clifton Park. This was the days of the discos. Remember disco?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I was working the Castilian Lounge. And at that time, the reason a lot of these places went out of business is because, not because of the disco, it's because they wouldn't get off the dance floor and start drinking.
There you go. Yeah.
So I was working for them, and we put on the dating game for them, and I did my act for them.
There you go. Where people would sit for a while and
yeah,
order drinks.
Sit and drink and order stuff.
That's right. Know? Yeah.
So because the music would just keep going and they wouldn't stop, you know, stop.
Sure.
So they said, could you do the Guinness Book of Records thing here? I go, yeah, but who's going to stay open 24 hours? I got to have somebody. They said, well, we'll stay open for you.
Neat.
I said, okay.
Yeah.
So I did 24 hours and 5 minutes at the Castilian Lounge. It's now a dentist office.
I'm sure they'd have you back. You know, I mean, there are people in the waiting room all the time.
I think about that as much as I think about all the radio stations I've closed.
And the ones that have burned down on you. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Well, there goes another one I won't see again.
Oh,
so
but
all of those. So I got in the Guinness Book, and that's when I decided, when I get in the Guinness Book, that I would go to Vegas. I figured I'd make it in some place.
Okay. Okay.
But I, you know, there was so much competition back then. But it was a great experience. I got to work.
Oh yeah, with some terrific people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, you know, as you say, it was steady work. You know, now I'm not sure where this fits into the timeline. I know that it had to be in the early 1980s. You actually, we crossed paths again. I see in the newspaper that the new Rotterdam Square Mall is going to open. And the entertainment that first weekend, it consisted of Bob Carroll and his magic. And I'm not sure if you were doing ventriloquism still with your act at the time. But I brought the family. And our youngest son volunteered from the audience. Well, I don't know if he volunteered. You kind of looked down, saw me, and pointed at him. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but it's seared in his mind. He was probably 4 or 5 years old at the time. So it was probably the mid-80s. He was born in 81. So, yeah, so it was the mid to late 80s. And, boy, when I saw that in the newspaper you were going to be there, I said, well, we got to be there. So we're sitting there, and you brought him on stage. And it was all planned. You know, you usually had somebody come up. And I don't know if you remember it. I just know that you handed him your magic wand, and it wilted. Yeah, it fell apart. And so, you know, and all you're telling him to do is wave the magic wand over the hat or something, you know, and every time he took it, it would go limp, you know. So at one point he decides he's going to do this. He takes it and he starts flipping it to see if it'll go straight again, if it'll stiffen up. And the audience goes crazy. And there was a good crowd there that weekend. Audience goes nuts. And you start laughing. And I don't know, again, you won't remember, but you came down off the stage later and you said, hey, can he go on the road with me? He's good. Yeah.
You know, that's one of those tricks where it's just great for any age, for the kids.
Yep.
Think they did something wrong and they were able to fix it. So I was working with Mr. Wood at that time, and we were doing promotions for Storytown and Gaslight Village.
Ah, okay.
So that might have been the
that must have been it.
Because I would do all the malls. Me and Steve Roscoe the Clown, we would do all the malls for them for a while when Wendy Bill couldn't do it anymore. And because Wendy
from Storytown, right? He was.
Yeah, the Marshal.
The Marshal up there. Yep.
Marshal of Ghost Town. He was there for 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we became good friends. He pinned a badge on me when I was 5 years old, and I grew up to admire him and hang around his house.
And work with him. That's cool.
Work with him, yeah. I filled in for him when he had a heart bypass.
Wow.
They asked me to be the Marshal. I said, no, I'll be a deputy. I won't be a Marshal.
Yeah, you can't take his place. Can't get into his boots.
Said, no, I know kids are going to be there and asking him. You know, sure. My parents.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to be a deputy, not a Marshal.
So. Oh, what great stuff. Yeah, it is. So you go out to Vegas, you come back to the area, and now you settle. Now, did you settle here locally, or did you go over into Massachusetts somewhere?
You know, we moved to Massachusetts.
That's what I thought.
Glens Falls for a while. We moved to Glens Falls. And I get a phone call one day from the company, and they asked me to fly out to New Jersey and audition to be an entertainer for a safety company.
Hmm.
They put on Say No to Drugs shows for kids and safety, fire safety, and regular safety, bus safety, you know, street safety, all that
right,
stuff.
Stranger danger sort of stuff. Yeah.
So I go out and audition. I get the job. And then it was a great job because they paid me. They gave me a car. They paid for my equipment, paid for my hotel. They paid for our health insurance.
Nice.
So I said, I'm going to stay with this job as long as I can. So they said, well, you have to move to Massachusetts. So we moved to Massachusetts, stayed there for 25 years. And then after I retired from that job, I said, well, I think my career's over.
Well, yeah, well, I suppose. And it wasn't. And we'll talk more about, you know, what you're doing in retirement, as most of us are doing something in retirement. Yeah, exactly. You can't just sit on I could sit on my butt all day, but my wife wouldn't like that too much. So, yeah, so you did have 25 years in the same area, so obviously made a lot of, friends and certainly contacts all over the place.
Right. But I did 7 states, so I was on the road quite a bit.
Sure.
So, you know, staying overnight in hotels because each school district's different. You don't know if it's going to snow and you got to be in place and everything. But it was a great experience. I really enjoyed it, and I did magic and puppets and made kids happy and saved some lives.
There you go. Well, you made a difference. Absolutely. You were giving at the same time you were, you know, entertaining. And you know, as they say, you do something you love and you don't work a day in your life. So, I mean, certainly there was some work to it, but you were having fun and doing what you had always wanted to do in front of folks.
Exactly. I always said that, you know, if you find something you love, just, you're not working.
Yeah, that's true.
Working, just enjoying it.
Terrific. So you finally, the traveling got to you, and you finally decide maybe it's time to hang up the puppets.
Yeah, we can. That's what we said, and we had grandkids out here in Burbank. So you know, once you get grandkids, you say I'm gonna move out there. So that's why we moved to Burbank, and our families are out here. So we helped raise our granddaughter and our grandson while they were growing up. So
nice. That's always nice. Yeah. Yeah.
We've great had experience. And I don't have to shovel snow.
That's also very
just
nice.
To move some mud out of the way when they get slide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You watch out for the fires. Yeah. Other than that, and the earthquakes, occasionally the earth moves.
Yeah. We only have three or four seasons, but they're all the same. Earthquakes, fires, mudslides, drought.
There you go. But you're enjoying yourself out there, and you're not limiting yourself to just there. I see you posting online that you're in Vegas a lot because it's just a short drive away.
We go to Vegas for trips, because we're so close. So we do go to Vegas every once in a while, see some shows. You know, I do like to watch the live entertainment. I miss a lot of it from the days when Ed Sullivan was on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, those days are just so far behind us now. It's amazing.
Variety shows. I mean, all the talk shows, Mike Douglas, Burt Griffin, and all those were great days to grow up and see entertainment.
That's true.
All the old comics are all gone now.
And yeah, that's true.
That was always what I wanted to be, an old-time vaudeville comedian.
So. There you go. So you launched something not long after you got out there because of the unfortunate circumstance of the COVID and the shutdown. And I think this was just very smart thinking on your part, because you know we needed some relief from what we were going through. So tell folks how the idea came about and what you did.
Well, when we got the news that we were gonna be locked up for 2 weeks, you know, it was only gonna be 2 weeks.
You're right.
So I told Debbie, I says, what am I gonna do? I says, I gotta come up with something to do because I can't just sit here and not go anywhere or do anything. So I just said, I'm going to go get a trivia book out of my closet and just do a trivia show. So I went on March 17th, 2020, practically the day of lockdown.
Yeah.
Just turned on Facebook and just did a 30-minute show. I gave away a prize at the end. And then I got done and the people showed up. And I go, I'm going to do this tomorrow and the next day and the next. And I just did it for the whole 2020. Almost 7 days a week.
Wow.
For 2020. And then I go, well, I'm going to stop. And people go, no, keep going. So I just kept going and then wound up as of last couple of weeks ago, you know, doing the 600th show.
From an outside an old Red Lobster, it's Trivia Time's 600th episode. It's time for a man who went from being unknown to total obscurity in just a few short years. The Trivia King, the one, the only Bob Carroll.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everybody, for the show 600. I have been waiting for this for at least 599 shows. I went down to 4 days a week and then 3 days and two and then one. And I go, because it was a lot of work towards the end.
Yeah. Well, anybody that's watched it and you can still see some of it online. You've got I know that I found your 600th show on YouTube. So if folks want to go and see that. And that's interesting because it's kind of a retrospective of your career a little bit, isn't it, that 600th show?
Yeah, I had my vent acts on there and some of the other stuff I've done with people was on there.
Yeah.
A TV show that I did out in Vegas, we did a pilot for.
Hi, friends. Fetchit Smith here for Fetchit Smith Use Pets. That's right. We've got them. Anything that you want. Your little heart desires. A goldfish that can't swim. A bent pussycat. A straight camel. We even got a dog that stutters. Ba-ba-ba-ba-wow. So come on down and see us. That's right. That's right. We have them all for you.
A little bit of magic and ventriloquism. I love doing the variety shows.
Sure, sure.
On a trivia show.
Yeah.
Because I get it gets my the people who are viewers are also entertainers.
Yeah.
A lot of them are magicians or ventriloquists or singers or they mm-hmm. do some kind of entertainment.
Yeah.
And that's how I got my audience for the trivia time.
There you go.
So I did that, and then I said I stopped at 600, but I told him I'd come back and do it once a month. It's a lot more work now because it was trivia in the beginning. And then I started adding jokes and then comedy bits and then more production and games and puzzles. And so it got to be a big production after a while.
And very well done. I mean, you know, I've watched a little bit of it and you can tell you're having fun. And hey, some those old jokes have to go somewhere. So
exactly.
You know.
You gotta keep today they're called dad jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In the old days it was just joke.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I sat and watched you a little bit trying to do the Guinness Book thing. I'm sitting there watching you do it, and I realized that you didn't go all that long before you started repeating jokes. And I said, well, he can't have 24 hours or even 12 hours of you know, straight material. I mean, he's going to have to repeat. And we all did that in radio. I mean, I used to, you know, the lines that I thought really worked, I made sure I kept them. And a year later, I would do them again on my, you know, weekly radio thing. Who's going to be listening that was listening a year ago and remember that I said that then, you know? That I picked up from Boom Boom Brannigan, if you remember that name, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I remember Boomer.
Yep, yep. And
always record hop. I helped carry his records.
Yeah, did you? You're not the only one. There are quite a few in this market that did that. Yeah, yeah.
Can I help you up to the gym with these?
Yeah, there you go.
School.
Yeah. Oh man, no, just you know, great memories there. But you gotta at least once a month. You gotta do something. Maybe you can get the Guinness Book again for how long you've you know done this this type of entertaining.
Well,
you
this,
never know.
I think this. Well, people think that it was 600 shows. It was, but then I also did variety shows of the people, so it was more than just the 600.
Ah, okay.
But so putting in the hours before you do a show was the hard part because
yeah.
coming up with trivia
sure.
without trying to repeat anything was the toughest part of all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I would have different categories just like Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune categories, but that's the hardest part. Cause mm-hmm. what can I show them that they haven't seen before?
Exactly, exactly.
Because mostly it's the same people over and over again.
It can be.
Show.
That's true. That's true.
And the thing of it is, I realized that during COVID, we lost a couple of viewers
mm-hmm.
during COVID.
Mm.
And they lost their spouses, but they stuck it out with the show.
Nice.
And they became friends
yeah.
across the country
yeah.
with each other.
Well, you were doing a service for folks. I mean, you were taking us out of that funk we were in and entertaining us a bit and just had something to look forward to every night, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we only had one stipulation, no politics.
There you go. Smart. Smart man.
It makes the world a happier place.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you're also a published author. We should mention that. You got a couple of books I know have come across my desk here over the years. So can we still find these tomes somewhere?
Yeah, they're in the bargain bin at Amazon.
That's where my memoir is right now. Yeah, yeah. I just noticed recently they lowered the price by about $6 a pop.
I just wanted to get them off the shelf.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So tell the folks what those titles are.
The one book is it's about magicians, but it's also a kind of an entertaining story about trips on the road and stuff. The world's most famous unknown magician and ventriloquist. A real long title.
For a real short book.
And the other one is called My Favorite Jokes. I used to post, in fact, I still do. I post jokes on Facebook every single day.
Yep.
And just to make people laugh or
mm-hmm.
even groan, I don't care, as long as I get a response. And so Debbie said to me, this was years ago, why don't you write a joke book? I said, where am I going to get those jokes? She says, you already posted them.
That's it. And paste. That's it. Absolutely.
So I did. I copied and pasted all the books into a book and put it on the market.
Excellent. Excellent.
And if you're an entertainer and you or a disc jockey and you need some material, that's exactly where you can go find
and,
it.
And I can attest to that. I've used more than one of your lines on the radio. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yes, and my good friend Mark Fuller, who still does a radio show, we went to high school together, and he's out in the Syracuse area.
Okay.
Still read my joke books.
You're going to live forever, Bob.
Well, it just seems that way.
More and more every day.
Exactly.
Well, I tell people I'm going to live forever, and they look at me funny, and I say, well, so far, so good.
Well, I never thought, you know, when you're growing up, that things you grew up with would no longer be there.
That's true.
You know, that's always the thing that makes you sad.
Mm.
You go, that amusement park's not there anymore. It's now just a park. Or, you know, that boss is not there who I really liked. Or,
yeah,
you know, these people that you miss. But along the way, you go, when you're, I drive through Saratoga and go, where's the radio station I used to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, not there anymore. You know? Yeah.
So there's the parking lot, but
exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, and sometimes it's just the parking lot that's left. You
exactly.
know, there's
exactly.
nothing else there. Yeah, yeah. It's just the nature of things. It's you got to be ready for change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's been a charmed life. I think back. I said I wouldn't change a thing about what I did.
Good for you.
It was right or wrong. I think it's everybody's right to do what they want to do for a living, try to make their dream come true.
Yeah, yeah. No, I feel the same way. I don't regret a day. And my life took a real weird, you know, turns along the way and strange, you know, corners and such. And yet I wouldn't change a thing. It all seemed to unfold the way it should for some crazy reason. And
exactly. When I left radio, I was kind of sad because I really, that was the catalyst that got me going into show business.
Sure. Yeah.
But then in the same sense as I wanted to be out there with people so I could see people.
Mm-hmm.
Because radio is a lonely business.
It is. And that may be where we're different. I really didn't need the live audience. In high school, I did the school plays and the talent show and stuff like that, and it wasn't bad. But the second I left high school, I stopped, you know, stage appearances because I was now on the radio, and that was for me was fine. When you put me in front of a group of people, I'm just not as comfortable as I was with that sole microphone in front of me and being alone in the studio, and so that's when I was most comfortable anyway, and so.
Yeah, to me, I really liked working at every radio station I was at. It's just the fact the pay wasn't great. Let's put it that
way. Yeah, that's true. You really couldn't live on it. No.
No, you had to make other income.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, in those days.
Yep,
you know, it's not like the big radio station stars that they have today, but it was fun while it lasted. But then I said, once I found show business and another storm, I said, this is what I really want to do.
There you go. Well, Bob, it sounds like things are good. You sound healthy. You know, I know you're enjoying life out there. Your son followed you into the business. Tell us a little bit about what he does, and then we'll wrap this up.
Okay. Yeah, he got into show business and the other side of it, and directing and producing and being an executive producer for a lot of shows that people might have seen, like the shows that called Botched, where they do plastic surgery.
Okay.
He helped make that show and produce and direct it. He's done the Real Housewives shows. He's done a lot of different reality shows along the way.
Good for him.
And he's done documentaries, and he's working on one now that it's going to be in the theater. And I don't know exactly the name of it, but I know it's about West Point.
Interesting. Very good. Well, congratulations. You know, the legacy lives on.
I'm glad it does.
And I'm just
get better than you do.
And you always do. You absolutely always do. Bob, thank you for taking the time today and sharing your story with us. I know it wasn't a whole life of radio, but you've clearly explained how important that part of your life was. And you made a Yeah, and you made a lot of friends here that still remember you and still talk about you. And, you know, most of us are retired, but we just sit around and chew the fat and say, remember that crazy guy that used to do the, you know, the puppets and the ventriloquism and the magic? And yeah, so you're might be on the other coast, but you're not forgotten. And I'm just so happy that our paths crossed for the few months that they did, you know, back in the 1972, 73 in there somewhere. And
I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me sleep under the console.
Which you really should have done, so you could be there when the station needed to be signed on instead of coming in 5 minutes after six. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, great memories. Great talking with you, Bob. Take care. Stay healthy, okay?
All right, thanks.
Radio Split Ranch.
Funny how life works, isn't it? As I was editing this particular podcast and listening to Bob talk about living in California among the mudslides, wildfires, drought, and earthquakes, the desk in my studio shook for about 10 to 15 seconds as the Northeast was moved by a 4.8 measured earthquake centered somewhere in New Jersey. You can't make this stuff up. As Bob mentioned early in our podcast, he only worked at 5 radio stations when he was young and also had a very short-lived magic show on Albany TV. So if we add his 6 sets of call letters to our running total of stations visited by all of our 31 guests so far, our grand total has reached 311. I wonder how many of those stations are still broadcasting from their original locations. See, when you're checking out the 2 books that Bob has available through Amazon.com, please feel free to check out my memoir, I'll Have to Ask My Mom. Bob's mentioned in there. It's all about my entry into the industry as a young man. It's bargain priced, fitting for the humor that it was written with. I know you've been wondering through this whole podcast this month, is there any record of Warren and Bob's time together on WKAJ in Saratoga Springs? Well, you're in luck, I guess. Yes, from March 29th, 1973, got a quick clip of me doing morning drive. It's like air check 30 minutes tops, with a little help from Bob doing the intro and outro to, of course, the local school lunch menus. This is 1973. We read those at least twice every weekday morning. This was my first job out of college. So please be kind in your critique of this not quite 21-year-old trying to wake up Saratoga with a smile. It's evident I was having an off morning. And if this doesn't scare you too badly, please join me again next month on the Radio Split Ranch. In the meantime, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened.
A bright, sunshiny day. Well, I don't know. We have clouds in the forecast for the WKAJ listening area, but you can't have everything. It's a Thursday. We're heading downhill toward the weekend. 14 and a half minutes after 6 o'clock and 34 in Saratoga Springs. And welcome to a Thursday Garland Go-Round. We'll be here till 9 o'clock for our first portion this morning. Then we hop on back for our second chance, which we need almost every day, from 10 to noon. So if you're planning on spending the day inside, we've got plenty of entertainment for you, and it starts right now.
And now it's time to check the school lunch program. Take it away, Mr. Radio Pronouncer.
Thank you kindly, sir. We'll do that. It's getting stranger every day, folks. St. Peter's Elementary School hot lunch menu calls for, let's see, Thursday. Yes, that's the 29th. I'll just write that on my fingers here. Hot dog on roll, buttered vegetable pudding, and milk. That's over at St. Peter's, their hot lunch menu for today. Checking quickly with St. Clement School, their hot lunch menu. Hamburger on bun, wax beans, rice with gravy, cookies, and milk. Let's hear it, folks. Saratoga Springs City School District. First of all, the junior and senior high. Spaghetti with meat sauce, green beans, bread and butter, jello, and milk. And over at the elementary city school today, Thursday, hot dog with beans, roll, peach crisp, and, of course, milk. And that's our first check of the school lunch menus this morning.
Can you imagine doing this for a living?
Yes, folks. He gets shorter every day, too. 6:16, our time, and music on the morning side from yours truly, the Garland Go-Round.
Sports. Ed Ingalls on sports.
Keith Morris of Sports Illustrated.
Live local sports coverage.
4 sports cast each day.
The biggest sport in town.
WKAJ.
We haven't yet been able to figure out when the 12th of Never is. Must come sometime after the 13th hour, or it must come after December 31st and before January 1st. But he's making a hit out of it anyway. Donny Osmond on the morning show.
At 19 minutes after 6 o'clock, temperature reading of 34 degrees, calling for variable cloudiness and mild weather today, tonight, and tomorrow. Chance of a few showers here and there. And the high temperatures both days in the 50s to around 60. Lows tonight will be in the low 40s. There's a 40% chance of rain today. That increases to 50% overnight, down to 30% for tomorrow, or Friday, heading into the weekend. Right now, again, in Saratoga, 35 degrees.
And now, as a public service of WKAJ, we present news from the world of agriculture. And now, here's your Farm Bureau reporter, Joe Peck.
Good morning.
To further development.
And due to difficulties beyond our control this morning, we don't have Bernard Brenner and the Farm Show Report. Mainly, I am the difficult this morning, the difficulty. In any event, we've got some good music for you. The night the lights went out in Georgia because the governor didn't pay the bill. Sounds like a nice, friendly town, doesn't it? Yeah. 626 in Saratoga Springs, a temperature reading of 36 degrees now, heading toward a high near 60 today. I'm Warren Garling, thank goodness. I'm looking all over for my name, found Robert Hall inside my coat, but that wasn't it. Here's the memories for you from 72.
Everybody's gone away.
All right, time for your morning whistling exercises. Let's go now, pucker up. Gorgeous. I didn't know you could do so well. Fantastic. 36 degrees. We're approaching 6:30, and time for news once again.
This is WKAJ, AM and FM, Saratoga Springs, New York. 900 on your AM dial, 102.3 on your FM dial.
Today's top story, the last American prisoners and the last U.S. troops leave Vietnam. WKAJ and United Press International have a full report.